Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really amazing founder, you know, that we're going to be learning a lot. And again, you know, like the whole stuff that we like to hear, the building, scaling, financing, all of that good stuff. But also, you know, like their business. I mean, it's not the type of startup that we hear. You know, it's pretty amazing. You know, they're managing over 100 billion, 600 employees, you know, tremendous growth that they have experienced too over the past years. And it's going to be super inspiring, the conversation that we have ahead of us. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest today, Matthew Flacek. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. Thank you so much for having us.
So originally growing up there in Jersey, how was life growing up? You know, tell us about yourself. How was life? Give us a walk through memory lane.
Hey, North Jersey, I don't think you can make that interesting at the end of the day. Some people will call it a communist state as we sit here. But life was good. Grew up playing tennis, probably playing way too much with computers at the same time and computer science. And, you know, dad was a lawyer. Mom was an occupational therapist. And I will say, you know, my dad to this day, 72 years old, still a real estate lawyer. And one of those real lawyers that like really liked the law. So always really aspired to be like him growing up and show the same work ethic that he had. But life was good. Tennis was good. Livingston Tennis was always a top 20 in the state. And we always got beat by Newark Academy. Not that that still bothers me to this day.
So how would you say that the competitiveness, you know, in your spirit, I mean, obviously playing tennis in college too, how do you think that has impacted you as well as a founder, you know, as a professional?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll just say what we see in no different when we're hiring people, folks who played competitive sports gives you a little bit of an edge. And, you know, it was always fun in a competitive nature. And especially in a North Jersey town where you had top tennis players and then playing tennis in college, it was, you know, I'll just say it was definitely part of the fun as you were growing up. I'd say on top of that, though, was also I mixed tennis with trying to find entrepreneurial things of ways to make money. Getting a job was fun. But, you know, in the early days of, I'll say, the internet and eBay and others, you know, I'd say I really try and mix that with finding interesting ways, you know, the early days of the internet to find ways to make money at the same time playing tennis and being competitive.
So out of all things, you know, you talked about computers and then also, you know, you ended up going into finance. Why finance, you know, instead of maybe like law school? Because obviously you ended up, you landed in New York City and you went, you know, at it in the finance space, you know, versus anything else. Why?
Well, now I feel like Alejandro going to have me start telling some secrets, but in college, that was also the dawn of IPOs. And in the late 90s. And if anyone remembers, E-Trade was offering IPOs for every account that you had. And I ended up writing a bunch of software to auto-confirm IPO trading and various other things. It might have hurt my performance freshman year of college a little bit from doing that. But, you know, I'll say I learned an unbelievable amount in a short period of time. My favorite part of that is that every dollar I made, I spent some and had some fun, don't get me wrong. But I invested it all in stocks that, if anyone remembers, Lucent and Cisco, they went up and then they went back down. So however much money I made, I learned every lesson from that, from losing it all, going back to about the same money I started. And I'd say that was really my entrance into the finance world that I had a passion and a love for.
So then you moved to New York City after college, and then you were basically working as a wholesaler, calling on brokers for mutual funds. You know, I guess, what was the experience like of calling, putting yourself out there? How was that for you?
Well, first is you have to remember, if I was a computer guy, what I really did, and coming out of college in the early 2000s after the bubble burst, there weren't a lot of jobs. And I was lucky enough to meet some folks at Lord Abbett who are still in Jersey City to this day. And it was the most out of the comfort zone job that I possibly could have taken. You know, I was debating at the time whether, you know, do you look for a job that we're in a computer science where you're, you know, I'm going to say no windows in a back room and not talking to people, or doing something like this, which there was an opening that I thought was going to really, you know, expand what I was looking to do. And I'll tell you, you know, calling brokers throughout the country and getting hung up on over and over again, at the same time, the firm kind of rated you on how many calls you could make and how long you could be on the phone. It was amazing. The training program was literally 4 to 5 months of training, of storytelling, presentation skills, you name it. And it was just this unbelievable experience. And I'll just say it gave me confidence that has stayed with me in training for my entire career and my entire life. So did something way out of my comfort zone. I felt like it really paid off, and it really opened the door to the world of finance to me as my career went on.
So then eventually you landed at Goldman Sachs, and that was, you know, really a pivotal moment for you because you had that exposure to the world of family offices as well. So how was that the immediate step for you to really get going with Pathstone? You know, like, how was that?
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, so there's a division of Goldman Sachs called ACO. The culture, and I think this was, again, you had this incredible training at Lord Abbott. At ACO, you did taxes, you did accounting, you did investments. The whole business was working with Fortune 500 CEOs and the Goldman Sachs partners. And they had things like ACO University, where they would send you away and you would learn about estate planning. And it really rounded out, I'll say, the experience that I had from the straight investment wholesaling side, investment side, to a much more holistic business plan. And what you saw is that, you know, this was, again, in the early 2000s, there was a real need for this. And there really were not other firms out there that offered, you know, your full suite of services more than just direct investments. And the culture part really left another lasting impression on me of just how much training was done to grow their people in-house and make you smarter and better advisors to be able to work with more and more clients. So those two experiences, you know, now having a computer science, a investing background, and now an accounting, tax, estate planning, really rounded out a skill set as we continue to push forward, I'll say, in life.
So how did you meet Steve? Because that was a very important, you know, thing in your path.
Yeah, I mean, we're at Pathstone today, which is, again, starting about 17 years ago, 18 years ago. I randomly met this incredible entrepreneurial family named the Braverman family and Steve Braverman. And his family invented the powder-free latex glove during the AIDS crisis. And the most amazing part about Steve and his family is that that was not actually the liquidity event. That was actually the third time that Steve's dad, I'll say, retired and is still working today at 86 years of age as a deal guy. And it's just an incredible thing to see. But I was lucky enough to randomly meet him where our families had a cabin in the Catskills. And I'll never forget when I met Steve at a barbecue and he said to me, "Hey, can you do asset allocation?" And I was like, "Yeah, Steve, I can do asset allocation." He's like, "You want to come in on Monday and talk?" And that was the start of it. He had this vision around services where families, and specifically his family, was looking for a solution. He had the investments covered as being a financial engineer and running his family's single family office for years. But the idea was, is, you know, all these other services that are hard to find for ultra high net worth families, all the tax, the accounting, the bill pay, et cetera. Steve's family sold the rubber glove business or Safeskin to Kimberly Clark in 1998 for $1.4 billion. And, you know, families of that size and single family offices have trouble finding the right capabilities or software. And that was the business model, was how do we create a single family office for multiple families?
So then obviously Pathstone is born and the rest is history. So at what point did it become clear that that it was time to get going with Pathstone? What was that day?
We originally were together at a bank. We quickly realized that it didn't make sense, the business we were doing inside of a bank. And so after the financial crisis in 2008, a group of us got together. There were seven original shareholders, and we formed Pathstone in 2010. We had the most amazing part. We had 19 people, 19 prominent American families, I would say, about $1.4 billion in assets. And we went on our way. And the most amazing part is this business model, as we launched it, It just took off. We effectively tripled in 4 years. It was a wild time. We were building the house while we were living in it. There was no technology. So we wrote our own optimizers. We wrote our own rebalancers. We helped design our own reporting systems. It was just a wild, awesome time that, you know, I was sitting there saying to myself, you know, wow, everything I had in my past, from the computer science and programming to the estate planning to the tax, et cetera, we were getting to use all of it. And we got to a pivotal point pretty quickly where we grew to $4 billion. with about 50 families. So families were slightly under $100 million average net worth. And we quickly realized that we weren't going to be able to keep this pace without scaling in a different manner. And we met with two pretty important investment bankers that I'll say changed the direction of Pathstone forever. And they came to us and they're like, you know, you need some more adults in the room. You need more capabilities. You need scale. You need to take on an outside capital and find a firm to merge with. And so we took on outside capital in 2014. We took on convertible debt. And I'll say that team there gave me an MBA in M&A, which I'm internally grateful for and thankful. And we went on a national search and acquired our first firm in Boston. It was another $4 billion firm in 2015. And all of a sudden, we are in the outside capital and M&A game, which I can't tell you that was part of the original business plan. And all of a sudden, we're an $8 billion firm. There was another firm of friends of ours that got that had some issues. So all of a sudden, we had another office in LA and another office in DC, and we're $10 billion. We grew it to $16 billion over the next couple of years, all organic. So from 2015 to 2019, we quadrupled. And it was just part of the story. And all of a sudden, we realized that this wasn't just going to be a club or I'll call it a cult for a very select group of families, that there was a blue ocean opportunity in a completely underserved market for the ultra high net worth.
So I guess for the people that are listening to get it, what ended up being the business model of Pathstone? How do you guys make money?
We are a completely unbundled business around services and investments. So anything that you can dream of on the investment side, to reporting, to we buy planes, we hire pilots, we background check the dog walker, we'll do the payroll for the household staff, we'll collect your mail from five homes. I like to say we don't say no for a living. And it's offered in a completely unbundled manner, very different from the world of the banks and the broker dealers. And that's where effectively we actually charge separately for what you consume versus trying to charge a percentage of your assets and kind of hoping that someone doesn't use those services because it reduces their margin.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
And it sounds like you guys have been using M&A to grow faster. I mean, like you were alluding to it, I guess, you know, one question that hits me here is that 99% of acquisitions, you know, fail because of the integration, right? The integration is the toughest part. So how do you guys go about acquiring, you know, service-based business where it's all about the people? How do you go about making sure that these people are going to stay in on the long run?
So first of all, Alejandro, I love the question because I'd say the other big differentiator from us on the acquisition side is that we fully integrate. And the learning probably started in Boston, where I pretty much moved to Boston for a year as we got together. As you know, with Pathstone, we don't have a product to sell. We don't have any widgets. We give advice. You know, in our world of AI and people thinking of chatbots, you know, families still want to be advised by other people. So we have a very robust equity program that's been another big piece of the outside investment in private equity world that I feel like just doesn't get the right justice. Sometimes hear private equity or VC, and they think it's like some kind of, you know, evil thing that's coming in and stripped to something for parts. It's quite the opposite. So when we take on a firm, a couple of things. One, we try and equitize the next generation. So we'll have close to 600 people by the end of the year at Padstone. Almost half are shareholders. And so when you live in a world that you know, and we've now had three rounds of private equity come through Padstone, we know that every 4 to 6 years, we're going to have a transaction. The shareholders who are here, yes, they make great cash comp, don't get me wrong, but they also build net worth with a lot of these incentive unit programs that we create with the private equity firms as part of the transaction. So all of a sudden, you know, folks every 4 to 6 years kind of have little mini transactions that they never would have had if we would not have an outside provider. And we know that every 4 to 6 years, we'll keep stair-stepping up to larger size private equity firms for the foreseeable future.
I mean, that's amazing. You know, like, so how do you guys go about then identifying some of those? Because, I mean, you've looked at horizontal deals, also vertical deals. So how do you go about one another? And then also, how do you go about executing on it?
So first, everything is culture. And so we've done 14 deals in 12 years. So it's very targeted and focused of when we do a deal. Historically, up until about 2 years ago, we were mainly focused on acquiring other RIAs who fit our culture and people. I will tell you, we have met some, you know, I'll say good businesses, but people who won't mix. Or sometimes you go and you have the social activity, and it's something very important we do. Going out to dinner, going out with the people that you're going to meet, you quickly realize who they are and what they're going to be like. And are we perfect? No. Have we been close to it? Yes. I mean, there's still this reality of trusting your gut, knowing the culture and knowing the people and what are the things you accept and don't accept? And what is the business model that may be out there? But we've done a very, very good job of building a strong team, building a large equity base. And what we started to realize is that the firm grew is, holy cow, if we're claiming we're this multi-generational firm for multi-generational clients, we're missing things. The other piece of it is every time you make a referral out to a law firm, to an accounting firm, to an aircraft firm, a travel firm, you're effectively taking a risk with your relationship with those clients because you can't control the experience any longer. And so part of this journey has been this obsession of insourcing. And we don't release things until it's at the Padstone level. And so we acquired a trust company 2 years ago. That was a big gap in our business to be multi-generational. Another big piece of it on the automation side was how do we manage portfolios on an after-tax basis in an incredibly efficient manner. And we combined with a firm in Walnut Creek that is effectively, I'll call it an AI automation portfolio implementation technology that tax loss harvests portfolios on a daily basis. So some pretty advanced things. And right now we're looking on the property and casualty insurance side. We're looking on this on the cybersecurity division side of what our clients face when things like that come up. We're looking potentially to acquire a law firm and bring that in-house. And how do we really like perfect the client experience and not take on that risk every time we see it of an outside party?
That's incredible. Now, obviously, you know, for your guys' operation, you've seen it all. I mean, not only you are helping, you know, with the investments of those families, but then also helping them with anything that they need. I mean, you're in the business of not saying no when they ask you for something. So what are some of the crazy things that that you guys have done for some of your families?
Well, first, yes, we're in the business. We don't say no for a living, but I will say we solve problems. And our job is to be that first phone call. And I'll say it's really an interesting part of the client journey. And you see it is that first time you get that phone call where someone's asking for something that's not about investments or tax, that's when you know that you've really become part of the family. And that's what we try and do. But you're right. We've seen a lot of interesting things. I'll tell you, a couple of weeks ago, we were a tough touch situation. We had a client whose parent fell ill and they thought they was going to die in a different part of the United States. And, you know, you get the call. We're 24/7. I mean, I think that's part of the bargain of what happens. But I got a call over the weekend and they said, Matt, I think my mother's dying. You know, how fast can you get me to New York? We had a plane on the tarmac in 90 minutes. But yes, I'll tell you, we have delivered goats. We delivered a lot of gold. We've done mock trials from when someone was in a lawsuit to get them prepared. And we hired the marketing people and we hired jurors and prosecutors. So, you know, we've purchased engagement rings for clients and their children. I'd say there's a lot of neat things that we do, and it's a really important part of becoming close to the families. And it's just what we do for a living.
That's amazing. Now, I guess for the people that are listening, to get a good understanding on the scope and size of the operation, what can you share with us?
Yeah, no, we have, like I said, almost 600 people towards the end of the year. If you look at the business, it's organized into a trust company, a technology company, and the family office. The assets are about 2/3 in the family office and about 1/3 in the trust company. I think the really interesting part about Pathstone as you go into that is the trust company is a non-depository trust company. Very similar, very different than a JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs, where they have to hold the assets and be the trustee. This allows this unique flexibility for the firm as we sit here today, where, you know, we can administer and be the trustee and not actually control the assets. So it really opens the door for different types of families and services that we hear. The other big piece I'll say on the data side is technology. There is absolutely no technology in the family office space. You could buy a package of software here and there, but we've spent the last, I'll say, 5 or almost 7 years building something called Arrow, which is accounting, reporting, rebalancing, optimization, and workflow, and basically making data as the new oil for the system. So we have a centralized data warehouse, a front end on top, connects to the investment custodians, it connects to tax, it connects to accounting, and all the users work through that at our firm. And when we sit here and you look at this and you need it, because I don't think the market's big enough for somebody to actually make this software. So when you meet other families and family offices, they're literally sitting in Microsoft Excel, and it would blow your mind.
So then imagine if you were to go to sleep tonight, Matt, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Pathstone is fully realized. What does that world look like?
You know, as you sit here today, Pathstone's $100 billion, but you realize that's tiny. And, you know, you look at Goldman Sachs at $6 or $7 trillion. It's a tiny firm. The other thing on the numbers is today Pathstone has about 700 families that average north of $100 million. But you look in the market, the last study I saw is that there's now about 230,000 families in the U.S. with north of $30 million. And so you sit there and you say to yourself, we have zero market share. And so as we move forward, I think there's this unbelievable blue ocean where the market for the ultra high net worth is completely underserved. There is no national brand in the fiduciary space and an independent firm that's out there. And so I sit here and I say to myself that we have a chance to become the national brand and create a firm that does not yet exist. And we've had success. And, you know, yes, are we almost 100 times bigger than when we started the firm? Is that exciting? Yes. Have we 4 and 5x'd each time we've had investors come into Pathstone? Yes. But we're still in the first or second inning of this thing. And I think the interesting part is that as we sit here, I don't know what the dollar amount is. And, you know, if Pathstone continues to grow, I'm going to throw out a number like $1 trillion. You know, is it that there's a couple firms like a Pathstone that equal $1 trillion that starts to disrupt the bank and the broker dealer model? Or is it Pathstone having to get that size? But I sit here, we're in the first or second inning of this thing. It's an exciting time. And, you know, I don't think there's an end game yet to start pointing to or to pick a number.
So, I mean, incredible journey now. You know, you guys have been at this now on your way to 2 decades, right? You've already passed the decade. You're on your way to 2 decades. Now, I guess on that front, you know, if I was to put you into a time machine, and I bring you back, let's say, to that moment where you're sitting, you know, in front of your computer, you know, after having met Steve and wondering maybe, you know, it might make sense to give your notice and do something, you know, with Steve. And let's say you're able to just show up right there in front of that younger self, and you're able to give that younger Matt one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
I would have pushed myself to make us leave the bank and start the business sooner. The entrepreneur, there's nothing more fun. This is an adrenaline rush. I don't think there's any other way to describe it. And to bring it back to computers, I'm not going to say that Pathstone's like the video game SimCity where you're building something, but truly building something, there's nothing more satisfying. And doing this with partners and changing people's lives, you know, around you as you build the business, and spreading equity out throughout the entirety of the firm, I think those are just things that have been incredible success. But I would just say if I could go back in time, maybe we would have started the business a couple years sooner than being inside of the bank. But no regrets. And it's just, you know, very thankful and blessed from where we are today and look forward to where we take it in the future.
So for the people that are listening, Matt, I would love to reach out and say hi. What is the best way for them to do so?
Our website, pathstone.com, PATHSTONE.com. And feel free to take a look and click the contact button and reach out. And one thing you'll notice, and you're welcome to test it, is if you fill that out, you'll get a phone call with, I'll say within 10 minutes, but I'd like it to be less than 5 minutes. Even if you do it at night, you're welcome to test it out and see if that actually works.
I love it. Well, hey, Matt, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Alejandro. It was fantastic. Thank you.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.